I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE ahead of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, as Palestinian Muslims and Christians in Gaza continue to die of hunger enforced by the UK-US EU-armed genocide in West Asia. And this in the shadow of US-Israeli war on Iran. Today also marks the anniversary of Fidel Castro becoming Prime Minister of Cuba after the revolution he fought for with Che Guevara that overthrew the US-backed dictator Batista. Under Trump and his Secretary of State Rubio, whose family fled Cuba under the dictator Batista, the USA has proved its power to violate any international norms in addition to enforcing human catastrophe sanctions. He has kidnapped Venezuela's President and First Lady Nicolás Maduro and Celia Flores. He has bombed African nations around 130 times, as well as bombing Yemen, Iraq, and Syria. In each case, the USA has used its intelligence agencies to inform Trump's decisions. One CIA whistleblower who illuminated the politicization of intelligence is former CIA officer Professor Melvin Goodman, who exposed Iraq war liar Robert Gates, who ran the CIA and later the Pentagon under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Professor Goodman is now a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University, and a columnist at Counterpunch. Thanks so much, Mel, for coming back on. Obviously, the war may have already begun by the time this is being broadcast. I think maybe I should just start by asking you about the Wednesday meeting with Trump, in the sense that Israeli Channel 14 said Netanyahu's demands from Trump are complete cancellation of Iranian nuclear program, zero uranium enrichment, zero uranium enrichment capabilities, removing it all, limiting the range of Iranian ballistic missiles to 300 kilometers, intensive, genuine, and quality oversight of Iran. I mean, shocking to see it being so openly said that an Israeli prime minister can just walk into the White House and talk to your president that way.
Well, he knows that he has a very good relationship with Trump. Netanyahu has been a house guest for the Kushner family in the past. Witkoff and Kushner are not taking any positions that are hostile to Israel. The ceasefire is really a joke. People are dying, and it's not funny. So Netanyahu, I think, is going to press for military force. And I think the targets may have a lot more to do with ballistic missiles than they do with the nuclear program, because My contacts tell me that from satellite photography, it's the ballistic missile sites that are being rebuilt. That's where the heavy construction is going on in Iran. But Netanyahu is a war president. It's war that's keeping him in office. When he faces an election, he's going to have a problem. But we shouldn't assume that things will get better in Israel, because I think there's a greater chance that the government will move even further to the right. So it's a dangerous situation. The genocide is terrible, and Joe Biden and Donald Trump have cooperated with that genocide. For Netanyahu, as he did a few weeks ago, to complain about deliveries is just nonsense. There was one interruption of heavy tonnage bombs that they never should have gotten in the first place because of the damage to civilians. But they're getting all the military aid they want, and they always have, and they're probably about to get more.
I mean, apologies for sounding like General John Keane on your Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, but you said that Netanyahu and Trump are narcissists, delusions of grandeur, but couldn't it be said they've actually succeeded? Their genocide continues, the destruction of Lebanon and Syria continues. They have successfully killed in Iran. You don't think John Ratcliffe thinks of himself as a great CIA director who's provided intelligence to...
Well, every director thinks he's a great CIA director. In the recent past, there's only been one very good CIA director. I wish I had worked for him, but I was long gone when William Burns came in as Joe Biden's CIA director. He was an outstanding director. John Ratcliffe is a political appointment. He's careful. He's not as... risk-taking as the director for national intelligence or the FBI director, but he's going to try to politicize intelligence, and it's up to the CIA to stand up and be willing to tell truth to power, which is what I did in the 1980s when I resigned and testified against Bob Gates in 1991. But Ratcliffe has been sharp in one way. He's kept the CIA out of the news for the most part. including their intelligence collection with regard to Venezuela and the Caribbean and the Pacific, to help the military make their military attacks during that period of time. So Ratcliffe is a lot more clever than his peers, but when you look at Trump's appointments generally, this is the worst administrative government, the worst cabinet government in the history of the United States. We've never seen anything as pathetic as this. And it's going to take a lot of time and energy to fix all of the damage that Trump has done.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get on to Ukraine later because Bill Burns went quiet, arguably, after becoming Moscow ambassador.
He didn't go quiet. He didn't go quiet at all. He made it clear what the Russians were doing. He gave warning to the Ukrainians. He warned Putin. He allowed intelligence to be used in a much more aggressive way than it's ever been used in the case of Putin's genocidal war against Ukraine. If you want to talk about genocide. You want to throw and narcissism.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get to that later. But I mean,
into the equation, why don't you throw in Vladimir Putin? What's your problem?
Speaking of that, and I think you know many in the Middle East would refute that you can compare the Gaza genocide to what's happening in Ukraine because. You know,
why don't you ask the people in East Europe instead of the people in Gaza?
Ethnically, Ukrainians and Russians.
Ask and get a briefing on what's happening to the infrastructure, what's happening to civilians, what's happening to hospitals, what's happening to children? You can't separate these two. The numbers are different. No, that's true.
You said the word genocide.
What they're doing is genocidal.
Obviously, Ukrainians
Putin
and
is doing
Russia.
Is what a war criminal would do, and he's been called a war criminal, and it's genocide. Of course it's genocide. Why don't you say that?
The Ukrainians are a different people to the Russians, in the sense of the meaning of genocide. I mean, on that actually, why do you think in your country you're not allowed to talk about NATO expansion policies catalyzing the worst war?
Who says
war?
You're not allowed to talk about it? I talk about it. I started talking about it in 1998. I was up on the Hill in the 1990s.
How often are you on Fox News and CNN and... How often are you? It seems to me no one in Congress has
mentioned. I write for Counterpunch.
It's a Russian talking point. It's considered
a Johns Hopkins.
If you said surely, if you said that, you'd be thought of as a Putin puppet.
My arguments are heard out there. I know I've been read, but a lot of people don't believe that NATO expansion had anything to do with Putin's invasion in 2022. I happen to believe and predicted. That it was only a matter of time. If we were going to surround Russia's Western Front with one NATO state after another and bring in U.S. weapons and so-called defensive missiles into Poland to put troops in Bulgaria, it was only a matter of time before Putin would use military force. He's used it in a very ugly genocidal fashion, but it was predictable. I predicted it, as I said, 20-some years ago.
Yeah, I mean, again, Ukrainians have not filed a genocidal complaint in the end. They talked about it and they didn't go to the ICJ. So I don't know where you're getting that from. But on the other hand, you saying what you were just saying to me, you know, would be considered Putin talking points if you were to get that piece in the New York Times and start talking about NATO expansionism being the catalyst for...
I have no control over the New York Times or the fading Washington Post.
No, my question is, why is that debate not allowed? Why is that debate in the so-called mainstream and political life in the United States not allowed so that you would sound like a Putin puppet just for raising it?
Well, I'm not a Putin puppet. I speak my own mind with my own views, and that's what I've been known for, and that's why journalists call me. And the majority opinion does not accept NATO expansion as a cause of the war. When the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov talks about root causes of the war, I think NATO expansion is a root cause of the war.
My question is why it's not accepted.
I can't speak for the mainstream media. I don't work for the mainstream media.
I don't mean just the media. I mean in Congress. I mean in the think tanks.
I can't speak for the think tanks. All I can speak for is myself. And I know what I've been saying, and I've been saying it regularly, and I still think I'm right. But I tend to think that I'm right.
And so This all takes place, of course, amidst the expiry of the START treaty. There was some rumors that at the summit in Abu Dhabi, the trilateral summit on Ukraine, there was some perhaps some kind of discussion. But as far as you understand it, from what you're hearing, perhaps from the so-called mainstream media, you've seen no real attempt at renewing the START treaty. And just to describe to you its importance.
Putin made an attempt to expand it for a year, just to extend it. I think the problem with arms control and disarmament is the Trump administration is not prepared to have long-term discussions. I took part in the SALT I and the ABM treaty. I was the intelligence advisor in Vienna. It took years to get these treaties. It took years to get the Intermediate Nuclear Forces treaty. Trump's life span in terms of his energy is maybe 24 to 48 hours, something like yogurt, I would say. He's not prepared to enter into long-term negotiations. He's got two negotiators out there who are negotiating terribly in terms of Israel and Gaza and Ukraine and Russia. They're two real estate billionaires, Witkoff and Jared Kushner. They don't know these issues. These are very technical, sophisticated issues. He doesn't have a real arms control team. He's got an undersecretary of state for disarmament, Danino, who doesn't have an impressive background. It's not like when Joe Biden had Rose Gottmuller, who I know, who is an outstanding student of arms control. So the danger now is we're entering into another arms race for nuclear weapons that no one needs. The overkill capability of China, for that matter, let alone Russia and the United States, is so vast that the world could not survive several of these missiles, let alone the thousands that Russia and the United States have in terms of the new START treaty, or the hundreds that China is now expanding.
Although, of course, China was not part of that treaty. To be specific, though, so the START treaty would have limited the expansion of new nuclear weapons technologies. Because is that the point? Because some critics of the START.
That's one of the things that are in resuming talks, assuming that talks could ever resume. You need to have aspects of the treaty that eliminate the new kinds of weapons that Russia and China are working on. But when you talk about military force, the U.S. overkill capability is huge. And now we're putting hundreds of billions of dollars into modernizing a program that doesn't need to be modernizing. And now there's the question of, will nuclear tests resume? Trump is threatening to resume nuclear tests. China has had some secret tests in the past that involved underground explosions. The United States violated treaties in the late 50s and early 60s with nuclear tests. But it takes guts and perseverance and tenacity to negotiate arms control. That's why I give John F. Kennedy so much credit for the Partial Test Ban Treaty. Even Ronald Reagan came around and negotiated the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. But then you had two presidents, two Republican presidents, George W. Bush, who abrogated the ABM Treaty, and then you have Donald Trump abrogating the INF Treaty, two of the most important disarmament treaties. But I don't think the world is attuned to the nuclear challenge the way it was, say, in the 1980s. That's what I worry about. It's become commonplace to talk about nuclear weapons.
Professor Melvin Goodman, I'll just stop you there. Professor Melvin Goodman, I'll just stop you there. More from the former CIA Directorate of Intelligence Analyst and now Senior Fellow at the Center for International Policy after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former CIA Directorate of Intelligence Analyst and now Professor of Government at Johns Hopkins University, Professor Melvin Goodman. Professor Goodman, you were talking about the importance of negotiating and working on negotiating a new START treaty. You don't think that Trump thinks, we have the numbers of nuclear weapons to blow up the world, something that you intimated in part one, many times over. So what difference does it make anyway? And Israel has nuclear weapons. So what's the point of talking about a treaty that doesn't really hold universally and certainly doesn't hold with China? Don't you think that's the way he might see it?
Well, he wants to negotiate a treaty that includes China. China's feeling is their numbers are so inferior compared to Russian and U.S. warheads that there's no reason for him to join the treaty. And perhaps with a target of 1,000 nuclear warheads by 2030, maybe he feels down the road that he would join negotiations. But right now, he's at a position of weakness, and the Chinese are not going to accept any positions of weakness. They have their own issues. If you look at the purge of the Chinese military that's taking place, that should get more attention in terms of why is Xi Jinping doing this? And what does it mean for a possibility of war with Taiwan? And what does it mean for negotiations with the United States, which will take place in April, apparently? But with Trump, you never know who you're negotiating with and what it all means. I mean, he does no study. He does no review. He's not surrounded by expertise at any level that I can tell.
Yeah, but in fairness, he does speak to them. I mean,
he doesn't take intelligence briefings.
Under Joe Biden, there was nothing between Washington and Moscow. There were not even any phone calls. There was no discussions. As you say, Trump is going to China in April.
Well, yeah, but who knows what he's going there to do? You know, when Nixon went to Beijing, everything was agreed in advance. Henry Kissinger ran a superb pre-summit exercise. They knew exactly what they were going to come away with. That's how you negotiate at that level. There's no one able to do that. You know, again, you have two real estate billionaires who don't know a damn thing about anything, from what I can tell. Witkoff doesn't even understand what the Donbass is and what it involves.
They both deny that. And you can't say that Steve Witkoff would back the bombing of Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, arguably. I want to get on actually to what you think of
What the hell does Witkoff have to do with Vietnam?
I'm saying that under Henry Kissinger, things were a lot worse for the people of Southeast Asia.
This is what you changed the topic. That's not what I'm talking about, symmetry and arms control. I'm talking about SALT One and ABM and the opening to China and developing a better relationship with China
and Russia. They believe in communication. It's not for me to defend the real estate tycoons of your country. What do you think of the delusions of grandeur that you've written about when it comes to Trump in the context of where every headline and every thing in your country is about? I mean, this is a Rothschild French chief turned to Epstein for advice on $45 million settlement with the Department of Justice. The New York Times.
What about Epstein, the Russian correspondent? What about the Russian contacts? Talk about the Russian contacts?
No,
Do you talk about people from the Global Initiative Fund who have talked to Epstein?
So you believe that Jeffrey Epstein was a Russian asset?
No.
And not an Israeli asset. I mean, I don't know whether you saw our show the other week. We heard the source.
Not an asset.
We had the source for Seymour Hersh's The Samson Option, Ari Ben-Menashe, who used to work in Amman, Israeli intelligence, who said that explicitly that the Epstein files, some of them are being withheld with information that Trump knows about, and that is what Israel are pressuring him with as regards war here in this region and over Gaza. Do you believe the Epstein files could be used to pressure your president into pursuing ever more Israeli policies?
What's ever important or relevant to Donald Trump that's in the Epstein files has been redacted, has been removed from the Epstein files. Remember that Trump has his own Department of Justice. He's weaponized the Department of Justice. Pam Bondi is a tool for Donald Trump. They reluctantly obey the laws about turning over documents. The only importance of the Epstein files is to keep it alive because the MAGA movement seems to be upset with this defense of sexual pornography and sexual kidnapping and the very important Americans who've been involved with Jeffrey Epstein. So it's become a political issue, which is very sad because a lot of lives are at stake in terms of the victims of Epstein.
Did you come across Jeffrey Epstein's name when you were in the CIA?
No, never.
You left in 1990, right?
1991, yeah.
But never did you come across his name, because it's clear that...
Never once.
It's clear that his associate was Ghislaine Maxwell, the daughter of Israeli asset Robert Maxwell. Robert Maxwell, you presumably did hear of when you were in the CIA.
Not in any document. You know, the world of intelligence is a lot more important than the names you're throwing around.
Robert Maxwell, who allegedly was implicated in nuclear weapon research transfer.
Never
Israel.
Came across his name in an official context, not once. And I worked in arms control and disarmament in the 70s and 80s.
And yet Robert Maxwell doesn't ring a bell either. I mean, do you think that the venality...
It rings a bell, but it doesn't ring a bell from in any important intelligence sense. You throw around these names that have no relationship to what's really important.
And do you think the venality, as you've described it, as regards Trump, means that the Epstein nonstop drip of feed of information coming from the files, maybe the Israelis have the unredacted ones, obviously Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie are trying to get it unredacted. You don't think that the pressure could be applied to Trump to do things he might not wish to as part of a blackmail operation?
Well, there's definitely pressure on Trump now. Last week, he very quietly removed the National Guard presence in Portland, Chicago, and Los Angeles. That's a very important step. He took the border commissar who was in Minneapolis, who did such a terrible job, and sent him packing. He's nervous now. His numbers are down. His popularity is way down. MAGAs are upset about the Epstein files. That's where a lot of the pressure is coming from.
I'm talking about Israeli pressure. I mean, you must have felt Israeli pressure when you were in the CIA. In the CIA.
Israeli pressure on who?
On Donald Trump.
What's the Israeli pressure?
Well, I mean, let's get back then to, with the shadow of war in this region, I got to ask you, do you think you can compare the politicized weapons of mass destruction Iraq claims that were made back then, let alone the claims made by the CIA which you criticized at the time in the 90s? Can we compare that to the politicized nature of intelligence being used in this Trump administration under John Ratcliffe and Tulsi Gabbard as head of DNI?
It's much worse now because you have these mediocre people in control of important government agencies. But there was tremendous politicization in the 1980s of the Soviet Union, making the Soviet Union look stronger than it really was in order to justify a defense buildup that Reagan wanted in the early 1980s. And this is why I testified against Robert Gates in 1991. Politicization
is bad. You're saying it's worse now. How do you know it's worse now?
Because I look at the people who are ahead of these groups. Come on, let's be serious. Look at the people who are running the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, the CIA. Have you ever seen a cabinet in the United States of such mediocrity, of such venality? I haven't. And I've studied American diplomatic history. That my PhD is in that field. Nothing compares to what is going on now. And a lot of damage is being done to the United States and to the Constitution of the United States and to the importance of separation of powers and the importance of rule of law and the importance of checks and balances. This is very serious stuff. You're trying to make debaters' points about Robert Maxwell and figures that aren't important in terms of real history as far as I'm concerned.
I'm making a point about Israel there, but then for all this degradation, as you yourself said in part one...
Israel gets what it wants from the United States. It gets it from Democratic presidents and from Republican presidents. Barack Obama never should have signed that 10-year, $40 billion arms aid agreement because they treated Obama so shabbily in the first place.
Okay, we're just running out of time. Professor, we're just running out of time, but for all the degradation, as you said, of public life, I should just finally ask you what advice you might give Delcy Rodriguez of Venezuela, let alone Miguel Diaz-Canel of Cuba, under this new Don Roe doctrine, given that John Ratcliffe is presumably very chuffed at being able to do the intel to be able to illegally kidnap
the head
of state.
I worry about Marco Rubio more than I worry about John Ratcliffe. If you go back and look at the national security strategy that was released in January, it's clear that Trump wants to be king of the Western Hemisphere and doesn't really care what China does in the Indo-Pacific region or what Russia does in East Europe, for that matter. So if I were in Cuba, I would see very dark days ahead. If I were in Venezuela, I would think that oil is going to be appropriated by the United States and used for the interests of Trump and his billionaire colleagues and American interests generally. And that's why you have Latin American governments moving to the right. They're going to try to protect themselves. Canada has been very smart, I think, in moving toward Europe and toward China, realizing that the United States that we've known for so many decades and a couple centuries is not the United States we're going to see for the next 3 years, and that how much repair will actually be made. It's not going to be easy.
And just finally, we're running out of time, but you have no time yourself for presumably Rubio and the likes ideas of spheres of influence, in that China can run their side of the world, Russia can run their side of the world, Western Europe can economically collapse as it seems to be right now, and you get your backyard south of the Rio Grande.
Well, that's the sad way the spheres of influence have been created. The sad thing to me is when Rubio came before the Senate for confirmation, he was confirmed 99-0. He's a mediocre Secretary of State, a mediocre National Security Advisor. The National Security Council doesn't even meet on a regular basis. I've talked to European diplomats who say they have no one to talk to at the State Department because no one has any official standing or access to real authoritative matters. The government on some levels, particularly with regard to diplomacy and disarmament, which I've written about, has come to a halt. And I don't see any reason to be optimistic about the near term. These are rough times, and you should be worried too.
Professor Melvin Goodman, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU armed bombing of Gaza, Lebanon, and Iran. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground this Saturday.